I am Justin Boyd.
And I am Brittany Pacheco, and we are the Watchers in the Basement of the Galaxy.
There you go. Welcome to the Watchers in the Basement. We are here today to continue our rewatch of the Guardians of the Galaxy films. Today, we are talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. That's because in two short days, Volume 3 will be out there. So let's tackle Volume 2 first. The release date was May 5th, 2017, so almost exactly 6 years ago.
Wow.
Since the movie came out. Yeah, and you know, obviously, Guardians 3 drops on May 5th, 2023, so it will be 6 years exactly.
That is crazy.
This movie has a runtime of 2 hours, 17 minutes, box office of $863 million. So it was up from the first movie, which was $760 million, so it got a bump. Once again, directed by James Gunn, who, of course, has directed all the Guardians films and projects. Mm-hmm. And the cast for this movie is Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Karen Gillan, Pom Klementieff, Vin Diesel, Bradley Cooper, Michael Rooker, Sylvester Stallone, and Kurt Russell. Now, Brittany, let's talk about the first time we saw this movie. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first time you saw it? And what are, like, have your overall thoughts changed? Are they about the same?
Didn't we go as a group and watch
it
together?
This. Yeah, we did.
Yeah. I remember that part. The movie, we've already established this, that Guardians are not my favorite. And this movie really solidified that. Man, that was a tough watch for me personally, both in theater as well as the rewatch. If you can hear Luna in the background, she agrees. She struggled to watch this movie with us last night. Man, I wanted to go more with an open mind for the rewatch, right? It's like, okay, maybe I was too harsh on it 6 years ago. I've grown, you know, not physically, but gotten older.
Right.
But the fact that I tried. Couldn't do it. Sorry. It's just way too long, and the story in the grand scheme of things doesn't carry anywhere, in my opinion. Now, I say this now because we have yet to watch Volume 3, but in the sense of with the Infinity Saga, like, I just don't really understand the purpose of this movie other than to maybe just introduce Celestials and kind of get that introduction. We see like a cameo of like the Watchers that would turn later into What If, of course. So I don't really get the purpose of this movie. Like, it just, to me, it doesn't really carry. What are your thoughts, Justin? What was your first impression of this movie, and how does it hold up today?
Yeah. So the first time we, like you said, we saw it together as a group, and I was on the same, you know, same boat as you. Like, I didn't like it as much. And actually, you know, recently we ranked the first 30, MCU movies, and you know, go back and check that episode out. We had a lot of fun doing that, but spoiler alert, it was not one of our higher ranked films. And I think me and you were probably a big part of that, because I think we both had it ranked pretty low. And I would be remiss to mention that this was the 15th film in the MCU and the third movie in Phase 3. So this is right when Marvel's like rolling. This is like their peak moment of box office domination. And I did not like this movie initially, and because of that, I have never watched this movie again in its entirety until today. And I've seen stuff over the years. There's certain scenes, you know, like the Baby Groot opening scene is really awesome, and we could talk more about that in a little bit. But watching this movie back today, this movie is a lot better than I remember it being. Like, I don't think it's better than the first one, because it's not, but this movie's not as bad as I thought it was. Like, my rankings would be a lot different, because I think this movie, you know, having watched all the Ant-Man movies now, I think this movie is better than all the Ant-Man movies. I think this movie is better than Black Panther 2, which we had ranked way too high. Black Panther 2, I don't think is that good.
Wow.
So like, this movie moves up a lot in my mind. I enjoyed the movie. Now, I agree with you. Even though it's only 2 hours and 17 minutes, that doesn't sound super long, but it feels like a long movie. It really does. And
it does.
Just for, you know, just to note, Guardians 1 was like almost exactly 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Guardians 2 is like 15 minutes more, and Guardians 3 is going to be 15 minutes more. So it's like 2.5 hours. Guardians mm-hmm. 3. So just a heads up going into that movie. But no, I really enjoyed watching this movie, and yeah, there's a lot of stuff that really hit for me there's a lot of stuff that I forgot, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like I remembered all the stuff with Ego and obviously Star-Lord, because that's the main thrust of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of things in there, I just did not remember. Like I didn't remember that, you know, that Rocket and Groot were kind of separated from the rest of the team. I'd forgotten about that part of it. You know, there's just mm-hmm. certain little things in there that were lost over time, because I didn't enjoy the first time I saw this, and I never really felt like watching it again. I would see parts and pieces on TV here and there, but right. I never took the time to sit down and watch it. So this movie has moved up a lot in with my rewatch.
Okay. I mean, yes, there are parts of this movie that I did enjoy. There's some great one-liners from Drax, from Yondu. I think mm-hmm. there's one really iconic line from Yondu that everyone should know what I'm talking about, but we'll cover that when we get to that part. However, for the most part, for me, the story just didn't pace well, and that's why it feels so long. And I still feel the same way now as I did 6 years ago when we saw it. But all things set aside, it's not as terrible as I remember. I will give it that credit. It's honestly not that terrible. There's parts in the movie, I think, for sure, that were dragged out way too much. You could have cut it in half, cut the, you know, runtime down. I'm okay with a 2 hour long plus movie as long as it paces well. Like if it doesn't pace well, you're gonna lose me. And it did. It lost me. I'm on the phone, I'm doing, you know, other things. I can tell you that I accidentally backed out of the movie from, you know, I clicked the button on my PS5 controller, and when I backed out, it said how much time was remaining. And I'll tell you exactly where I was. It was the moment where Nebula finds Gamora on Ego's planet, and she's, you know, chasing her down in the spaceship. I backed out. It said 1 hour and 7 minutes left. And I'm like, good God, this needs to hurry up and be over. So this is like just kind of what I'm saying. Stuff was dragged out too long. I don't know if every single thing that we got in this movie was absolutely needed. Yes, there's, you know, comic relief moments, but for me, and I'd love to hear everyone else's thoughts that are joining us in the chat or joining us in the replay. Mm-hmm. Let me know your thoughts. Like, did this movie pace well for it to be a 2 hour and 17 minute movie?
Yeah, that's a good question. And speaking of the chat, hello to Mel out there for joining us. We appreciate that. So,
hey girl, hey. Well.
Yeah, she mentioned Luna. Luna is not on the mic officially, but you will hear from her from time to time.
Probably.
But, you know, I think that, like I said, the runtime's not crazy, but it's you know, it makes sense. It's a little bit longer just because of the function of having so many characters. There's so many characters.
Yes.
And having rewatched this, like I said, I'd forgotten all, like every character is kind of served. I think every character served pretty well. Like I really do. I think that you kind of get something for all these characters. And when you have so many characters, that's so tough to do. And I mean, in a 2 hour and 17 minute movie, that's really not that bad. Like I know it felt longer than it was, but
yeah,
I mean, that's like when you're trying to provide, you know, story for 9-10 characters, that's tough to do. And I think James Gunn did pretty well with this. I really do, looking back on it.
I think you and I are going to have to agree to disagree on that.
Yeah, that's fine. But speaking of like, you know, the characters, let's talk about some of the new members of the cast. And the main two characters we get in this movie are, as I mentioned before, it's Palm Clementeef as Mantis.
Bravo to you to be able to pronounce that. I'm not even going to try.
I actually watched a YouTube pronunciation video right before this because I was, you know, she's French. I mean, I know who she is. And, you know, if you watch any kind of interviews with the cast and stuff, they all just call her Palm. And I think, I mean, not just because they're friends with her, but because they see her name and you just like, oh, it's a bunch of letters. I give up, you know, like, but
yeah,
I try to be as accurate as possible. So, So she is Mantis, who is an empath who, you know, spoiler alert, we learn, or I guess we, did we learn in this movie that she's She's Ego's daughter. I don't think we don't know that. Yeah, yeah,
it's in the holiday special.
Holiday special, right? She's basically just Ego's like slave.
But she did say that Ego hand raised her from her Earth planet, and we can talk about this a little bit more in depth when we get to that point about what Ego's plan was and how Quill plays into all of it. But yeah, she was basically a slave to Ego to try to help him sleep and kind of keep his emotions in check. Shout out to Yesenia, who's here in the chat today, joining us. Appreciate you being here, Yesenia. Hi, how are you?
Yeah. So for Ego, he uses Mantis. I use melatonin. So probably similar, you know, like it's just not a person. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get it at HEB or Kroger. I mean, we're not sponsored by anybody. So, right. You know, if Whole Foods wants to jump in, sure.
Hey,
I don't go there, but yeah, we would love the sponsorship.
Whole Foods is affiliated with Amazon. So by extension, like that would be super cool.
I do contribute a lot of money to.
I do, as
my,
too.
As my brother and mom refer to Jeff Bezos as Uncle Jeff. That's what they call him.
Oh, God.
When they order something, they order it from Uncle Jeff. So,
yeah. Hey, also shout out to Christian of McDork. He's in the live chat. Hello,
Christian. And Yesenia's in there, too.
Yes, I mentioned that. She's here. Sorry. Yeah. So appreciate to everyone in the live chat saying hello to each other. Christian, not a fan of Whole Foods. That's unfortunate. Whole Foods is okay. And yes, he works for Amazon. So sponsor us.
Yeah, we love that. I mean, no one provides better coverage of the Prime Studio show The Boys than us, I believe.
I appreciate that. I think you're right about that too. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the spinoff whenever Gen V.
Yeah.
Gen V. It comes out this summer, I believe. Yeah. So
yeah.
Can't wait for that.
Exactly.
But back to the Guardians Volume 2 and talking about Mantis, you know, in this movie, now this is something I didn't forget, was the relationship between Mantis and Drax, which is, it's a pretty big part of the movie, right? Like,
yeah, it is.
Like, what are your thoughts on their kind of back and forth and him being just incredibly rude and mean to her, but like, he's just trying to be, he's literal as possible. And
yeah,
she just doesn't understand interaction. So it makes for an interesting pairing.
It is. A quick shout out to Angel Prado. I apologize if I mispronounced that, but hey, appreciate you being here. First time here. We hope you enjoyed this. We have a lot of fun here on the Watchers in the Basement, inviting you to hit that subscribe button, hit the like button for this video. We talk a lot about pop culture. Today it's MCU. Next week it's going to be Succession. So join us. We appreciate it. Everyone here in the chat saying hello to one another. It warms my heart. I love this. I'm here for the size of Groom in this movie. Oh, size Groot. Of Groot. I think you mean Yesenia. Groot. Yeah. Yeah. She corrected herself. So appreciate it. So Angel. Okay. Angel, I know who you are. Yes. Wizard of Main Street over on Instagram. Appreciate you being here. Sorry. I totally spaced out on that. So once again, appreciate you being here. So tell us what your thoughts are about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. To answer your question, Justin, about the dynamic between Drax and Mantis. It's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. You got one character who's quite literal in the sense of pretty much everything. And then you have Mantis who is just kind of like gullible, if you will. And Drax can pull like a practical joke on her when she asks him, "Can I please pet your puppy?" Referring to Rocket, right? Rocket doesn't like being called a raccoon, a rabbit, a vermin, a rat. It's, you know, he does
called, yeah, Krabby Puppy. He's called I think triangle faced monkey, I believe, by Ego. Yeah.
By Ego. Yeah, right. Exactly. So, I mean, Rocket just, you know, he gets called all these things, but Mantis refers to him as a puppy and asks Drax, "Hey, like, can I pet your puppy? He's so cute." And Drax is like, "Yeah, sure. Right. I have a dog. I would let anyone, I mean, I won't let anyone, but I would probably let people pet Luna." But then Rocket just snaps at her and she's, and then you see Drax over dramatic laugh. "That was a practical joke. I just invented it." It's like, dude. And then she starts laughing. Like, I don't know if it's, that uncomfortable kind of sort of laugh, but their dynamic is funny. It's strange, but it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about the two of them?
I like how, you know, he starts it off by saying that, you know, she looks hideous and she's horrifying to look at. And, you know, he says stuff like, you know, he calls her a gross bug lady. But then, you know, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say when she wakes him up from his sleep to tell him the all important reveal of ego. And he's like, listen, I try to lay you down easy. You know, and then he starts like retching in a way. And she's like, what are you doing? He goes, I'm imagining like being physically intimate with you. I'm like, dude, I'm gonna need you to take a chill pill. Like, you're just being straight up rude. Oh my goodness. So Angel here says, I'm not normally on YouTube, but I love Guardian series. One of those series where the sequel does not ruin the first one. Oh, interesting take. Okay. I have strong feelings about this movie that are not in favor of this movie. Also, not a huge fan of Guardians. Sorry. Justin feels differently. This rewatch kind of helped him change his mind a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I love the Guardians overall. I always thought this movie was the weakest entry of all their time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like Thor Love and Thunder. So, like, I think me and you are kind of the same, but we enjoyed that movie. So I don't think that, like, I mean, their time is very short in that movie, but I've always enjoyed the Guardians. I just... Like I said, I didn't remember this movie being very good. And I, going back and rewatching it, I was wrong. Like things change. People change. And I don't know. I just enjoy it a lot more now. So
I think Christian's appalled that I don't care for Guardians, saying we need to talk backstage. And I'm like, I said what I said. We apologize for Brittany take on Guardians. That's fantastic. Yeah. Sorry, y'all. This is probably the most unpopular opinion I will have when it comes down to the MCU. But sorry.
But you know, with Mantis and Drax, you know, they're both these like lovable characters. You know, like, but she's not used to having any interaction with anybody, mm-hmm. and obviously, he is just. They're both such oddballs that it's a nice pairing for the movie. I mean, at the end, obviously. They care for each other a lot. You know, there's the part where Drax is like carrying her and he's like in that quicksand of the planets imploding or whatever is happening. Honestly, there's so much CGI stuff that it kind of turn your brain off. And you're like, what is that? Just colors. I mean, it looks good. No, I mean, I'm not bringing it down, but it is one of those things where you kind of glaze over like what, but he's like carrying her, putting her above him as he's like sinking. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, at the very end, he mentions that, you know, that she's beautiful. And then he's like on the inside, you know, like you have to keep that joke going. Yeah.
Like a backhanded compliment. Like, right. Just, how dare you? Angel says the scene where Drax tells Mantis to watch out after she's been hit, had me rolling and still gets me every day. Yeah. That.
Yeah. I completely forgot about that from the original time watching the movie. But he's got to keep that. He wants us to be, it's very clear that he does not find Mantis attractive. Not at all. So
I'm being chastised for laughing about this. Sorry. I'm sorry.
But I do think that Mantis, her addition to the Guardians is, I think it was pretty well received by everyone except for the person who created Mantis. So the co-creator of Mantis, a guy named Steve Englehart, comics mm-hmm. writer, he was disappointed with the character's portrayal, saying that the character had nothing to do with Mantis. His quote was, I really don't know why you would take a character who is distinctive as Mantis and do a completely different character and still call her Mantis. So I can't speak to the comics. I have read a couple of Guardians comics recently, but they were post MCU. And so, you know, I think it's like anything else. These characters, they change over time. A lot of the things that we know about even the most famous characters, Superman and Batman, have evolved over the years. So I think, you know, James Gunn, you know, speaking of Superman, he's going to be doing the next Superman movie. But I think the reason why he enjoyed picking the Guardians and Peacemaker and, you know, the oddball Suicide Squad members is because
they're misfits.
They're misfits, but also they're characters that you can kind of mold in whichever way you want them. Whereas like with Superman, like, yes, Superman's kind of evolved over the years, but like now we all kind of know who Superman is, right? He's from Krypton, lands in Kansas, raised by, you know, this farm couple and
Kevin Costner,
right? Sorry, the sirens are on my end.
Yeah, but we get it. I mean, we know, because of these stories, you know, you get to know
right.
who these heroes are, and obviously it's no different than with Guardians. I am not a comic book reader. I've said this many a time on several podcasts, but I do appreciate the characters that we get from the MCU. Just Guardians are not my top ranking favorite characters. I'm sorry.
That's fair. So another addition to the cast, and he has a small role in the movie, but let's talk a little bit about, there's not a whole lot to talk about, but what did you think about Sylvester Stallone being in this movie?
Like, I thought you were talking about Hasselhoff.
Well, no, I mean, actually he's more pivotal than Stallone is, but
a little bit. Yeah.
What did you think about him? Cause like, that was one of those things where I remembered he was in the movie from seeing it originally, but
mm-hmm.
I thought he had a bigger part, and I think he does have a little bit bigger part in Volume 3.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, rewatching this, I was like, man, like they really didn't need this character, and they certainly didn't need like a stunt casting move like, you know, Rocky, Sylvester Stallone, or Rambo, right. Whatever. Yeah,
Rambo,
whatever your
yeah.
favorite character is. But go ahead.
What's his character in The Expendables? Not that I don't enjoy The Expendables, but right. it's kind of the same sort of, you know, idea. He's a fellow Ravager. You know, he worked with Yondu back in the day, and they've got some kind of beef and what have you. I don't know if his character, along with the other majority of the Ravagers that we do see in the end, spoiler alert, y'all. You know, Yondu dies, but he's given a Ravager's funeral, which looks spectacular. Oh my goodness. The amount of spaceships that are kind of like firework-esque sort of celebration of life, if you will, was really, really cool. But you see Stallone, you see, I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but you see Michelle, is it Michelle? What's her name? She just won.
Michelle Yeoh.
Thank you. Yep. You know, a character who eventually gets recast in a different franchise with MCU, right? With Shang-Chi. You know, I don't know if that really carries any weight, right? I don't know if that storyline was particularly necessary, other than in the end, it just looks really cool. Stallone, it's just, you know, you get a big named actor to be in the MCU, because I think either they themselves actually want to be in the MCU or the MCU just wants to have them. I don't know. It doesn't really carry any weight.
Yeah. And I think he's just a favorite of James Gunn, because then he would go on to play King Shark in the Suicide Squad. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, James Gunn is pretty loyal to his kind of circle of actors that he works with. So that's also why, you know, in the future, when the DCU really gets going, you're probably going to see a lot of the people from these Guardians movies in DC projects. But I do like what Yesenia says. Yeah. Thanks for posting that. Because I agree with her, and it's very similar. Like, it seems out of place having still in this movie.
He was in Spy Kids. I don't recall that.
I mean,
right. Reminds me of Spy Kids appearance of still. I really don't remember that. I've seen Spy Kids, but it's been quite some time. Anyway, side the point. Yeah. It just kind of felt like a very random big named actor to put into the mix, much like well, maybe not much like Hasselhoff, because you do hear talk about Hasselhoff and then you see that quick cameo of him. That was kind of interesting. Stallone, I have nothing against Stallone. It's just random. Totally random.
Yeah. Speaking of another big name actor, let's talk about Kurt Russell playing Ego. He is a celestial who is Peter Quill's father.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think about the character in this, as far as like Kurt Russell playing the character and just the character in general?
Oh my God. Kurt Russell is legendary. I mean, you're talking about Wyatt Earp from Tombstone, which happens to be one of my favorite Westerns of life. There's so many iconic lines he says in that movie. I love Kurt Russell. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the guy. It's also just a really random kind of like, what? Like, you get this big name actor to be in the MCU and you think, oh, cool, he's Peter's dad. And you get like the explanation of how he met Peter's mom and, you know, how Peter came into the world and what have you. And the explanation as to why Peter was able to hold on to the Infinity Stone from the first movie and not just be completely obliterated. Mm-hmm. That's how Ego was able to locate Peter, because he carries on that celestial gene, right? First and foremost, when we see Kurt Russell in the opening of this movie, was like, what did it say? Missouri 1980. And he's got like the hair, like the Farrah Fawcett hair. It just totally, I completely forgot about that. And I'm like, the de-aging was well done as well. I think the best de-aging I've seen from the MCU was with Michael Douglas and Ant-Man.
Yeah, this is along the same lines though.
This is along the same lines, good. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's pretty good. But that hair, that very, you know, long, thick Farrah Fawcett hair just floored me. I'm like, good grief. And then to see him again, you know, when Quill and company meet him and he still kind of has that same hair, it's grayed out, what have you. But Kurt Russell. What more can I say? He plays a really good villain too.
Yeah, he does. He really does. You know, what floored me in that opening scene with the Ego on Earth is they showed a Dairy Queen. Now, Dairy Queen, like, I can't say, I'm sure there's movies where Dairy Queens appear in a movie, but I can't think of one off the top of my head. The reason why I mention that is I'm from a very small town in Texas, and that is a staple of small town Texas. Literally every small town in Texas has a Dairy Queen. Like, just one. My town had under 4,000 people, and we, you know, we're having a Dairy Queen, and the town next to us has a little bit more, has like 6,000 people. They have a Dairy Queen. And then, I mean, it's like every little town in Texas has Dairy Queen. So to see Dairy Queen was like, wow, that's kind of crazy. And then the fact that like Dairy Queen had like, you know, giveaways, you know, like a fast food tie-in with the movie, which got me to thinking like, you don't see fast food tie-ins with movies as much anymore. Right.
No,
like,
you don't.
It's really strange because back in the 90s and early 2000s, that was like such a huge part of it. I mean, like,
oh God, yeah.
Like the Batman toys at McDonald's or whatever, the Batman like glasses for Batman Forever. Those are like famous. I mean, like honestly, some of the, like the best made little glass cups you could get. Like they're really
cool. For McDonald's.
Yeah. You need, I don't have one with me. It's in my parents' house. We have a couple of them. They're really cool. And they look brand new. And we've used them for years, but,
man, no, I miss the 90s.
Yeah, there's you don't see tie-ins with these big movies anymore. I don't really know why that is.
On the subject of Dairy Queen,
yeah,
it's always been a staple in my life, you know, growing up here in Texas.
Yeah.
I will willingly admit I've never ever had a Blizzard.
Oh.
If y'all are not familiar with Blizzards, it's basically like super ice cream in a cup, and when you flip it upside down, it does not fall out. Like it's thick.
So
like
think about thick. What that does in your body.
It does to me. It runs through me. So
right. Yeah, we're getting a little personal, but no, Blizzards are great. Again, if Dairy Queen is watching or listening, we would love to be sponsors.
Sponsor us.
Because like the commercial says, DQ. That's what I like about Texas. So yeah, I've seen that also. But now moving on. You know, like the song Brandy is an opening, and it's kind of weaved throughout the movie.
It is.
And, you know, this is obviously Awesome Mix Volume 1, the songs that were in the first movie. I think that Volume 2 is just, it's not as good. You know what I'm saying? No, like,
it's
a little bit of a step down. I think the songs are more like deep cuts as opposed to.
They are.
The first movie, they were kind of bigger hits. But it does fit that same aesthetic that James Gunn's going for. So I think it fits. And then, you know, also whenever you're talking about, you know, Ego, the part where he is explaining to Peter, you know, how he met his mom and all that stuff. And it's almost like claymation. That's you remember that part? Like that is like, looks so impressive. Like that.
It is where he has like the different kind of egg-like.
Right.
Housing. And he's explaining his story about, I don't know where I came from. I don't know like who created me, why, but I learned to manipulate the matter around me. And thus he created his planet. He's connected to his planet. Literally his brain is in the center of the planet, but he wanted to find life outside of his own little domain, right? And so he created what he thought a living being would look like, Farrah Fawcett hair and all. And he travels to other planets. He travels to other planets and he plants his seed, quite literally, on all these other planets. And the whole idea is he's trying to expand himself. He, you know, even though he's a celestial, I guess there still is a timeline for celestials. He basically wants to live forever. He wants to take over. Right. And yeah. Quill's mom was someone that he, I guess, genuinely may have loved. He visited her several times and he said to Quill, if I visited her that one last time, I wasn't going to be able to return. He goes, he had to come back to his planet. Otherwise his form would deteriorate. And then like the big reveal of what Ego did to Peter's mom gutted me. Like, I remember the first time when we watched this, right? It just absolutely gutted me. Angel poses a good question here in the chat. He goes, but was he genuine? Yeah, that's a fair question.
Yeah.
Was he genuinely in love with Quill's mom? What do you think, Justin?
It's hard to say. Honestly, it's a total toss up. It really was. It really is, because
with the name Ego.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as we see later on, there's all these like skulls of all these other dead, you know, children or whatever. So obviously he moved on from Meredith Quill. So
yeah,
it's honestly, that's a tough call. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And to that point, Angel, did he perhaps genuinely love Quill's mom? I don't know, because being a god, and if you love someone, do you put a brain cancer in their body to kill them? So probably not.
That's the question I was going to ask, because rewatching it, I still don't think is it totally clear? Like, so he put the brain, he gave her a brain tumor to obviously kill her, mm-hmm. so that he would never want to come back to Earth. Is that?
I don't know if it was that. I don't know if it was that, or because she always referred to him as being from the stars or being an angel, or like, was she at risk for outing Ego and revealing his true self? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, but I don't think a lot of people would believe her, you know?
Well, no, because they thought she was crazy, or they thought because of the brain tumor that's what was causing her to say these things. If it's hallucinating, I don't know. You know, of all people, that brain tumors and brain cancer are a very touchy subject for me. But with the idea for Quill to learn, because he was getting on with his dad really well. He was learning about, you know, his heritage. He was learning that he too could wield the power of Eagle's planet, right? He was able to create like some sort of force out of his hands. He created a ball. You play catch with your dad.
His dad. Yeah, that was about. Yeah.
Yeah. That, you know, so they're playing catch. Cool. But then the big reveal of Ego saying, yeah, that's why I had to put that brain tumor in your mom, because he's trying to get Quill to come over to his side to say, let's do this together. Let's, you know, take over the universe together, whatever. And it seems like Peter is just so brainwashed. He's like, yes, master, whatever you say, master, kind of thing. But then he hears about his mom. He's like, what the F did you just say? Like, you killed my mom.
I do like how Chris Pratt plays the character, or how the character was written, because he's pretty apprehensive from the beginning. He doesn't like, you know, you see this trope in movies where someone finds out it's they've a parent or something. They just like fall head over heels for him. And he was not, you know, he was very apprehensive. Right. And eventually, you know, because Ego shows him like through the light, all this stuff. And then he kind of brings him around to his side.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like that. He, you know, Peter didn't automatically just go, oh, there's my dad. You know, now I have peace in my life or whatever. He was still like questioning, like, hey, what's this guy really doing, or what's he up to? And
right. What's his ulterior motive kind of thing? And I think that plays probably more to real life than just like, oh my gosh, you know, my dad who abandoned me, he now wants to be a part of my life, where I feel that real life situations could probably be very similar to what Peter was experiencing in the movie. Mm-hmm. Angel poses a really good question. He says he's having trouble. He's having difficulty, excuse me, remembering the plot of the first movie. Did the dad want Quill to continue his work, or was the dad hoping to take over Quill's body in some way? I don't think any of this was in the first movie.
No, Ego wasn't in the first movie.
Right.
Right.
But what I can kind of piece together is that Ego couldn't take over the other planets on his own. He just didn't generate enough power.
He needed the power to continue his expansion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thus, he needed Quill.
Right.
Two is better than one, even though Quill is half. He's half celestial, half Terran, as he says, or Terran. Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately, if he went through the plan, Peter would probably have died like in the process, because he's not fully a full celestial, right?
Yeah. I mean, he wanted Peter by his side, but he says, you know, like, you can just be a battery. And it's kind of apropos, yeah, given, you know,
Rocket stole the batteries.
Rocket stole the batteries at the beginning from the Sovereign. The reason why the Sovereign are chasing after the Guardian. So
right,
batteries, you know, is a big theme in this movie. But yeah, mm-hmm, Ego needed Peter's life force or his power source to continue his expansion of the universe plan.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that probably sums it up. Like I said,
but that was something that was hard to remember. I remember Kurt Russell being the villain,
mm-hmm,
Ego, like all that stuff. But like, as far as like, what was his evil plan? I didn't really remember it, but
right.
I think they lay it out pretty well.
I think it's fine. It's just, it's one of these movies. It's, and a lot of people are critical when it comes down to the MCU, because I think a lot of fans want every single movie, Guardians, Iron Man, Captain America, so on. They want every one of those stories to play into the big collection of characters, right? With your Avengers.
They do, though.
But I don't feel that this particular one does. I don't think this particular one actually has a purpose when it comes down to like Infinity War and Endgame. Like, how does it carry on that story? I feel like it's more of a standalone than,
well,
playing into the Infinity Saga.
In the first movie, and you know, someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Infinity Stones were first set in Guardians 1.
Term. Right. That's fine. That, yeah, carried a purpose, because we do see an Infinity, right, Stone. I'm talking about this specific movie, Volume 2. How does this carry into the end game of the Infinity Saga? To me, it doesn't. I could be wrong. I could just be overly critical because I don't care for the Guardians. I just feel this is kind of like a one-off. It's just, you know, they needed a sequel. They did a sequel. They came up with a story. There we go.
I think the way they did the story with, you know, Peter being half celestial, and of course, at the, mm-hmm, end of the movie, he gives up that right. So, you know, because the only way that Ego can die is if there's no longer light left. And so,
right,
there's no light left in Peter. So Peter makes that sacrifice to give up that and just be a normal person.
That's true.
And so that would explain, you know, later on, Peter obviously could be a very powerful adversary for Thanos, had he not given up his power, you know.
So. True. And like Angel points out, Mantis did put Thanos to sleep. And that's fair. That's fair. We do have the introduction of Mantis. Yeah, we right, get not an introduction of Nebula, but she kind of comes into the fold of the Guardians, because before in the first movie, she was very much in league with Ronan. Ronan's no more, yeah, thanks to the Guardians and the dance off and and such. But Nebula kind of, in a way, mends her relationship with her sister, Gamora. That's how we, you know, she obviously comes into being part of the Guardians of the Galaxy. So, I mean, those are just like little things.
Yeah, but, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about this, because I think this movie is actually a really good example of a movie that I think people say they want when they're talking about Marvel, because this movie, as we've just talked about, isn't hugely a part of the Infinity Saga, right?
Like, right,
you could, right, skip this movie and still understand
and not, right, miss a beat. Yeah.
But that's kind of what people say they want, though, right? They want these like movies that are standalone, but also connect. No, that because like now there's so many movies and people think, oh, like, oh God, there's 31 movies and there's about to be 32 and there's 10 TV series and there's all this stuff. And like, if you haven't started on the MCU, it's almost like too daunting to start. Or let's say you're like, well, I stopped after Endgame. It's like, well, where do I pick up? And it's like, there's so much has come out in the last couple of years. So to me, this movie, for all the people who are complaining about, you know, or wanting a standalone kind of Marvel movie, this is kind of standalone, but there's enough little parts that connect. Like, it's kind of perfectly done. I really think that. And from what I've heard about Volume 3, and I'm seeing it tomorrow night, is it doesn't have a lot of connections to the Infinity, or I mean, to the multiverse saga either. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a standalone thing where, like, you could just watch the three Guardians movies as a trilogy if you wanted to. Now, I think you're going to need some context of what happened in Infinity War and Endgame, and even maybe some 11 Thunder to understand how the Guardians got from point A to point B to point C. But I think this series, or this trilogy of Marvel movies, with Marvel characters, might be the most standalone of all of the trilogies.
Possibly.
It might not really be close if we really... And we could talk about trilogies for Marvel another day, because now there's several characters. Yeah. So
for sure. So real quick, I want to share comments from the live chat. Yesenia says his reaction to his father, I'm going to say killing his mother, is foreshadowing to Endgame reaction to Gamora's father's choice. So we're talking about Thanos.
Yeah.
Like Thanos killing Gamora. Okay. I think I follow. And then Angel says, wondering.
She's talking about, Peter's reaction.
Peter's reaction to... Yesenia, if you can clarify, because I'm having a problem processing. Sorry, it's been a long day. Angel says, I'm wondering how the success of the MCU continues after this saga, though. The Thor one recently was meh, and I'm hoping Guardians 3 delivers. Angel, I would definitely encourage you to check out our... What was it, Justin? Our ranking of the MCU at the time. It was the first 30 movies. The first 30 movies. We talked a little bit about Thor, Love and Thunder. We have some different opinions from our fellow watchers. We also did a movie review solely on Love and Thunder. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that if you ever want to check that out. Spider-Man, McDork says. Spider-Man.
Yeah, but there's a lot of Tony Stark in those movies. Like the first movies. I mean, the first one, Tony Stark is a living character who is, you know, Peter's mentor. And then in Far From Home, there's symbolism everywhere of Tony being of Tony's death from Endgame. So, and you know what, to me, I like.
And then No Way Home had a lot of Doctor Strange. So,
yeah, I mean, this stuff should be connected. Like, I think Marvel's done it right. And like, if people are complaining about, if you don't like that stuff, then don't watch it. There's other stuff. But like, to me, they've done it the right way. And that's like, now that's why DC is going to do the same thing with James Gunn. It's going to be an interconnected universe, which is what the comics are also. Like, that's just how it is. And that's what makes the most sense. So,
yeah, I got you. Christian says there are, but it doesn't need the history of all the movies. I mean, I can see that. I'm just kind of with like continuity and kind of thing. Christian, you know me, I kind of tend to be nitpicky about some stuff. So moving on back to Volume 2. We've just talked about Ego a whole lot. Justin, where do we go from here?
Well, I want to talk about, you know, with Ego, you kind of touched on it when Peter, you know, when Ego tells Peter about, you know, killing his mom, and then he crushes his Walkman, and that is that's where, you know, Peter's like, you shouldn't have killed my mom and squished my Walkman. And then that just, you know, ignites the final scene, the final battle, which when they're fighting each other, like, you know, and Ego's in human form, it's pretty cool. When Ego becomes a full blown planet, that's when it kind of gets wacky, where you're just like, how do you fight a planet that you're inside the planet, but you're fighting? I mean, I don't know. It's that part of it's kind of wonky for me, but, what did you think about the in battle between Peter and Ego?
It was way too long. I'm sorry. It was just way too long. Like I said, the moment that I accidentally backed out from watching the movie, and it still said I had an hour and 7 minutes or so remaining, we're getting to that point where that end battle is about to begin, because you have like the side little battle of Nebula and Gamora. They're trying to, you know, sort out their issues. And then something happens with Ego that Gamora is all like, what is happening? You know, Rocket, who's been separated from the rest of the Guardians for a period of time, also learns the true nature of Ego thanks to Yondu, because it turns out that Yondu, who we saw from movie one or volume one, you know, abducted Peter, but he was supposed to deliver him to Ego, but caught wind that Ego was like killing off all his offsprings. And so he decided to keep Peter instead, right? Ultimately saving his life. But again, the true nature of Ego is shared with everyone. Band together. Cool. We're going to fight, you know, Ego. We're going to fight a planet, because that makes sense. Groot, I think, is the best thing in this whole bit, because Rocket has to explain to him, all right, see this little device? There's two buttons on here. You know, you push this button. You don't push this button. Right. Goes through the whole plan, right? Explains it to Groot and says, okay, which button are you going to push? Groot goes, I am Groot. And it's the one that you shouldn't push. No! Yeah. Like, you dummy? I think that's the best part of this whole situation. And then, of course, Yondu coming in with his one-liners is just wonderful. But that whole sequence was, like, really long for me. What about you?
Yeah. No, and going from Ego to Yondu, it's kind of perfect, because, you know, Yondu tells Peter at the end, whenever Yondu makes a sacrifice to save Peter, he says, you know, he was your father, but he wasn't your daddy.
He wasn't your daddy.
Yeah. And then, Yondu talks about how he was, you know, glad to, you know, or he said, I'm damn lucky you're my boy. You know, then he sacrifices himself. I thought that was really well done. I thought the Yondu inclusion in the movie was, obviously he was in the first movie, but
yeah,
I think that character was well done. And I'm interested to see what happens in volume 3 and if he somehow makes some kind of flashback cameo or something. Ooh, yeah.
I hadn't considered that. Yeah. With Yondu's kind of character arc, I actually appreciated that sort of development, because when we were first introduced, it's, you know, he's the guy that kidnapped Quill and raised him to be a Ravager, and, you know, they have some kind of beef in volume 1, and Quill kind of, you know, does a double cross with handing him the Infinity Stone, but it's not, it's a troll, you know, back, you know, when were trolls like a thing in 70s, 80s? I mean, definitely before my time, but
I think trolls was like 90s.
Oh, was it 90s? Okay. Well, either way.
Yeah.
Well, that can't be, because Quill was taken in 88. So
yeah, maybe it's like late 80s. It might have been like a regional thing. Like, I don't remember.
That's
it
true.
That's being true. Well, very anyway, big here in Texas, but who knows?
Yeah. Beside the point, Yondu has like an affection for like little knickknack type things and what have you. But then at some point between his interaction with Sylvester Stallone's character, there's a riff, and then there's kind of like a mutiny with his crew, and he's, you know, a captive. His whole the people loyal to him are killed off. They're shoved off into space, right? And, you know, he kind of feels defeated, and Rocket's there as well, and they're okay, we're gonna make the great escape. Groot has to be told time and time again what he needs to do, right, in order for Yondu to get his little arrow device thing that is controlled by whistles. Still an impressive talent, I might say. I don't know if Michael Rooker can actually do that, or it's dubbed. Still really impressive.
But the whistling, or controlling the arrow with his mind or with his heart?
Both.
You actually find out.
Both. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Both. That's really impressive, Michael Rooker. If you ever watch this, cool. Yeah.
So Michael Rooker, you know, speaking of impressive, like all the other characters who are in this makeup, like,
those are not his teeth, are they?
No, those are not his teeth. Those are fake teeth. But his character was, you know, the makeup, and they were able to cut down the makeup time for almost like in half for every character. So
nice.
Yeah. So that's pretty huge. Like, especially for Dave Bautista, his Drax.
Oh my God.
It only took 90 minutes to apply his makeup for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, whereas it took 4 hours for the first film. So they figured out a way to cut that in half. And it saves, I mean, 2.5 hours each day that you're saving on that. That's pretty awesome. But But back to Michael Rooker, his death was kind of, I guess, at the time people thought he was going to die based on the trailer or whatever. And so he spent time on the set of Avengers Infinity War to counteract the rumors that he was going to die in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, because
brilliant.
There's always like these like set leaks and set photos and stuff like that. So he was trying his best to keep that a secret. I'm not sure that was like a huge thing. Like, I mean, Yondu is great in this movie.
Yeah.
He's a big part of the Guardians story, but I don't know that like him dying. I mean, it's awesome. This movie's well done, but in the grand scheme of the Avengers storyline, I don't think it's that big a deal.
It's not, but it's important to Quill, obviously, because his character growing up without a father, the closest thing he had was Yondu. And, you know, the line that you just shared earlier about, you know, he might've been your father, but he ain't your daddy.
Yeah.
That means a lot to Quill, obviously, because he gives like this great sort of speech as they prepare Yondu's body to, I guess, go through, what do you call it, to be cremated into space, if you will, and talks about how he used to carry a picture of David Hasselhoff in his pocket or his wallet, and he used to pretend that Hasselhoff was his dad because he had, like, the cool car. They would go fight crime, and they would, you know, do all these great adventure things. He goes, but really, he goes, Yondu was my David Hasselhoff, basically, and... you know, it's just sentimental.
The idea that you know, what you're looking for might be
was there,
like,
all
right
along.
Next. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, one of my favorite lines from Yondu is what I think would be infamous is he saves Peter at some point while fighting Ego, and they're flying and they're, you know, gradually coming down.
Yeah.
to the ground, and Yondu has, like, I don't know if it's his whistle or what, the arrow thing, but Quill looks up at him and he's like, "Oh, you look like Mary Poppins. Was he cool?" "Yeah, he's cool. I'm Mary Poppins, y'all."
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. That was I know we busted up laughing in the theater when we first heard that.
No, that's a great line. Really funny stuff.
So good.
Yondu telling Peter to use his heart, not his head. That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Touching stuff between the two. You know, and speaking of like emotional moments, we get to see, or we get to find out more about the sisterhood that is Gamora and Nebula. What did you think about, you know, kind of getting that backstory about, I mean, we knew some from Guardians 1, obviously. We knew that obviously that Nebula, or I'm sorry, that Gamora was Thanos' favorite, and Nebula was, you know, a distant number two, if that. And then now we, you know, we get more of that, you know, the when they would fight, Gamora would get the best of her, and Thanos would punish Nebula by, you know, replacing a part of her body with a piece
of machinery.
Yeah. So what did you think about the way these characters kind of came together in this film?
I mean, you could totally understand the animosity that Nebula would have towards Gamora. I get it. Now, I get it to a degree. I'm the youngest, virtually grew up as an only child because there's such an age difference between me and my siblings. Also, I'm the favorite, so don't know what that's like. but for Nebula to really just have it out with Gamora and say her piece, right? Not keep it bottled up anymore. And she's like, you know, you always had to be the best and you always had to do this. I just wanted a sister. Like, I just basically, she's just saying, I wanted someone to care for me. I wanted someone to love me. I wanted someone to be my friend, if you will. And Gamora, then it clicks, right? Her explanation, of course, I think is reasonable. I think it's completely valid given the story that we now know to be of Gamora's childhood, that Thanos, like, you know, killed her family and took her and raised her. She's like, I spent every day of my life fighting to survive to the next day, and so on and so on. Yeah. So, I mean, they both have their struggles. They both dealt with it different ways. It's just Nebula needed someone to be on her side, and Thanos just, like, pinned them against each other, which is terrible. Like, I know that happens in real life. I know that happens in families, and that's just heartbreaking to know that that's a reality. However, they overcome their differences to some degree. They hug in the very end. And Gamora says, you know, you'll always be my sister. Nebula is on her own war path to try and finish Thanos, right? But I think it was really great to still see Nebula. She, from the get-go, she is the reward that the Sovereign promised to the Guardians for fighting off this horrible space creature thing. And Nebula is like, give me some of that, whatever that food fruit was. And they keep telling her, no, it's not ripe enough. It's not ripe. It's not ripe. And when she finally takes down Yondu, when the mutiny is about to happen, right, she tells the remaining Ravengers, like, you know, follow me, if you will. It takes a bite out of that damn fruit or whatever that she wanted. And she spits it out. You know, it's not ripe. It's like, bitch, everyone was telling you that.
Exactly.
She's great. I think Karen Gillan is great in this movie. I love her.
Yeah, she gets she has really good lines. Like she's not a comedic character, but she does have some great lines.
It's just a dry delivery, and I live for that. I'm with that.
Her facial expression. So good. So from that relationship to, let's talk about Groot and Rocket. So in the
baby
first
Groot.
Movie, right, in the first movie, Groot is a tree. He's a 7-8 foot tree. He is basically like Rocket's protector. I mean, Rocket's clearly the leader and the brains of the operation, or the brains of the two. But, you know, Groot obviously is a physical imposing force. In this movie, Rocket is basically kind of protecting, or like, you know, watching over baby Groot, who is, you know, one of the cutest things we've ever seen in a movie. I mean, from the opening credit scene where he's dancing as the Guardians are fighting that beast or whatever, to, you know, the part where Yondu and Rocket are imprisoned and they're trying to tell baby Groot to go find
the
Yondu's
prototype Finn.
Yeah. His Finn and his arrow. And, and Groot just brings back everything but that, like
Yondu's underwear.
You know, Yondu's underwear. Yeah. And of course, you mentioned the button scene where he's like, don't push this one, push this one. He's like, I am Groot. He's like, no, that's the one I said not to put. Yeah. So,
and apparently, baby Groot, still voiced by Vin Diesel, y'all.
Yep.
Baby Groot apparently has a potty mouth that Rocket says at some point, we gotta talk about your vocabulary or your just however you talk. It's awesome. Yesenia's right. Groot brings the eye of, Is it Taserface? Is it?
No, not Taserface.
Not Taserface? Yeah. Oh, God. Taserface. Terrible name.
Terrible name. Yes.
Oh, also, was it a toe? Like a severed toe? We don't talk about that, but yeah, that was also another thing. Yeah, Baby Groot is adorable in this movie. You know, when he's getting picked on by the Ravagers and stuff's being poured on him, like, you feel for him. Like, that's just... And he's just walking away, so, you know, sulking, and just, it's like, do you want to help us get out of here? You know, it's just so sad. So sad. But he's feisty. He's feisty as well. Yeah.
I do like whenever, you know, he says, I am Groot, one of the million times he says it, and Yondu's like, what did he mean? And Rocket said, he said, welcome to the freaking Guardians of the Galaxy, but he didn't use freaking.
Yeah.
Freaking. Yeah.
That's what the follow up is. We got to work on your, work on your vocabulary. It's a baby Groot's is awesome. And speaking of kind of like just lines that are shared, I want to go back to Drax a little bit, because aside from being someone who takes everything literal, he also had some great, you know, one liners as well. Beginning of the movie, the Guardians are waiting on the space monster to come and, you know, battle, right? And they're all wearing some sort of protective chest piece that Rocket made for them. And I don't know if it was Quill or Gamora who questioned Drax, like, why aren't you wearing it? And he tries to kind of give like a reason, like a legitimate reason, I think. And then it's like, I have sensitive nipples. And then to follow up with that, when they're on Ego's planet and it's about to, you know, be bombed into Kingdom Come, for Drax to escape to the spaceship, it's, you know, he has to put on that armor, right? Because it allows him to fly up to where he needs to go. And as soon as it latches onto him, he's like, ah, my nipples. I don't know why that's so funny to me, but it is.
I like the part where Drax, like whenever Peter first meets Ego, and Drax learns that Yondu wasn't Peter's biological father, and he's like surprised. And Rocket's like, one of them is blue. Like, you actually thought? I don't know. Oh. It's the characters are so great together. Like, it's definitely this like band of misfits that becomes a family. And this movie is, you know, in the first movie they kind of form this family, and this one they try to like figure out how to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like the through line for the whole trilogy, and really for all their appearances in the MCU.
It is. I mean, there is a very touching moment, you think, from Drax about, you know, I think Nebula says that none of you are friends, and Drax says, yeah, no, you're right. We're family. He goes, and we don't leave anyone behind. He looks at Mantis, basically like saying, including you, but then he looks at Nebula. He goes, except maybe you.
Right.
She's just like, morons, like, you know, just, I'm surrounded by idiots.
Yeah. And we talked about earlier when Mantis woke up Drax, the first thing he said was, I like a woman with some meat on her bones. Like, you know, he's trying to push her away. And
yeah,
that's a great line.
That's a great line.
One of my favorite lines was also when Peter finds out his powers. Now he's immortal. He can do anything with light. And he's like, get ready for an 800-foot statue of Pac-Man with Skeletor and Heather Locklear. I'm going to make some weird shit. And then later, as a payoff, he turns into Pac-Man when he's fighting his dad. Yeah. It's real quick. But
it's real quick, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool, too.
What a child of the 80s. Good Lord. Yeah. What would you do if you had that kind of power, Justin? What kind of weird shit would you do and make?
The 80s. Yeah, I don't know. That's a really good question. I don't, like... Something with like Bo Jackson, because like late 80s, like Bo Jackson was like, I mean, Bo Jackson and Michael Jordan at that time for me were like, co-kings of the world.
I was gonna say if you don't say anything about Michael Jordan, I was gonna be really disappointed. Yeah.
I mean, Transformers would definitely be involved some way. Like, it'd be like an Optimus Prime,
nice
Chicago Bulls themed, you know, Optimus Prime or something. I don't know, something badass. Like that, because I was way into Transformers also.
That's cool. Yesenia in the chat says, basically, this movie is a modern Breakfast Club, which is why she loves the Guardians. That's fair. That's a great parallel. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, and like the Breakfast Club, it's known for like the music in the movie. And
absolutely,
James Gunn is like, he is one of the few people that really emphasizes music in his movies. And I mean, that goes for, you know, Peacemaker. The music of Peacemaker was awesome. The music in the Suicide Squad movie, obviously all these Guardians movies. Mm-hmm. I mean, the trailer for Volume 3, you know, takes these kind of obscure songs and, you know, mixes them with maybe some ones that we kind of know, and really delivers. It really brings out a lot of emotions. Like, I really think that, like, I think Volume 3 is going to be a very sad movie.
Oh, without a doubt. From all that
I've heard about it. Like,
without a doubt, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say something very unpopular for sure. And I've already said it before, but I'll say it again. I'm going to be happy it's going to be over. I know I'm a horrible person, y'all. It's fine. I know who I am. It's taken me 34 years, but I know who I am.
Yeah. You know.
I know. But the music, you're right, they've always done a really good job with the soundtrack. And while this one for Volume 2 doesn't hit quite as hard as Volume 1, it's still good music. Can't deny it.
Speaking of music, at the very end, Kraglin gives Peter a Zune. My question to you, did you ever have a Zune?
I did.
That's what I thought. I thought you told me that. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I owned a Zune. God, college. I thought it was going to be the next big thing, you know.
How does it compare to an iPod? Because I had one of the first iPods.
It doesn't.
Okay. Is it better or worse or what? Like,
I'm an Apple person, so well, I mean,
now of course, but this is 2000 what seven or six or something, or when these.
So the movie, so the movie took place in 2017. I like to think that obviously it's right in that same like present time. Yeah, it was about 2007, 2000, between 2007, 2010, I want to say I had one. It was fine. I mean, because Apple products were just so expensive, you know, for me back in the day, Zune was, you know, it's a Microsoft product. It, not sponsored us, but the fact that it was something I could afford, something that held a lot of music, which was great. It did have like a subscription basically where I'm trying to remember how it worked out, but I did have a Zune to answer your question. It was fine. It had the touchscreen ability. I could play, you know, games on it as well if I wanted. I think I could log on to the internet. I don't remember. It didn't last with me for very long. Not that I broke it or I didn't take care of it. It doesn't compare to when I got, I think, my iPhone. So Yesenia says about 2008.
Yeah.
I was late in the game getting an iPhone, right? The first iPhone came out in 2007. I was like maybe in my 20s when I got my first one. And So then knowing that I could put music and such on my phone and didn't necessarily have to worry about having two different devices.
Yeah. I mean,
Apple just won.
the phones killed the players like that.
It did. Right. Yeah. Even the iPod, like I had a refurbished iPod and it was, you know, it had a lot of stuff. Like it was not a Nano or anything, but it was an iPod.
Yeah. I had the iTouch, which was like right before the touchscreen phone, I think, really got going. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I had the Shuffle back in the day. I had the Shuffle. So, but the Zune, I always thought it was funny. I'm like, well, how were they able to get that? You know, was Apple not like willing to?
Well, no, they chose Zune to make a joke about it, because like Kraglin really sells it to Peter. He's like, hey, this is what everyone on Earth is listening to. It's a joke.
It's,
of course,
it's why it was in a junk shop.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, it's got 300 songs on it. Peter's like, oh, 300 songs, like, you know, granted, like if you were a kid from the 80s and someone gave you a device that you could put in your pocket that you could have 300 songs on, like think about, you know, a tape would have like 12, maybe.
12.
You're like, wow, like that'd be,
double
live album might have 24 songs or something, you know, like that's.
I just want to know how he charges songs. It. I just want to know how he's going to charge it.
Well, I would say his power, but he doesn't have that power anymore.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah. Maybe he regrets that.
Probably.
It's time to charge it up.
Oh man. But it was a cute moment between him and Groot as the movie is concluding. Ravengers are showing up for the funeral. He's listening to his, you know, songs on the Zoom. And I think it's Brandy, right? Ego squished the Walkman. I can't remember the song he was listening to, but Groot like climbs into his lap and, you know, he's reaching up for like, let me listen. And, you know, they share like a, almost like a father and son kind of moment. Cause I think the song was also very like on the nose about that.
It was actually called Father and Son. I think it was by Cat Stevens. So
Cat Stevens. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. So very sweet moment.
Yeah. Let's talk about the mid credit scenes. And I say scenes plural because there's five of them, which has got to be the record. I didn't look this up, but they're all very brief and they're all like kind of, there's not a whole lot to them. You know, one of them obviously teases Adam Warlock, which we're going to finally get in Guardians Volume 3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Aisha talks about creating Adam, which is like the next step in the evolution of the Sovereign people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kraglin, he's now taken up Yondu's telekinetic arrow in the control fin, and he's practicing. And of course, mistakenly stabs Drax with one of them. Yeah. That was pretty funny.
We have
the Ravenger leader, which is played by Sylvester Stallone, Sakaar Accord or Ogord, I guess. Sorry,
mm-hmm.
Tough one to say. He kind of reunites with all the other Ravengers. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're like, let's go steal some shit.
Right. And then you see Groot grow into a teenager. Which I mean, that's a hell of a growth spurt to go from like a baby to, you know, now he's the size of a human person. Like that's,
I mean, didn't that kind of happen to you growing up? You said you grew like
there was one summer where,
summer.
not 3 feet. No, I didn't. I didn't double in size in one summer. No.
But you had a big growth spurt one summer.
Yeah. But you know,
yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's a tremendous growth spurt that maybe Groot, yep, or Groot underwent. So
yeah, for sure.
But you know, I guess it was like needed, or maybe, I don't know if it was needed, because you could kind of pick up the next time that they're, you know, involved, and
it would be Infinity War. So
yeah. So I guess they did need to like do that in this movie.
Yeah.
Kind of made sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the final one was, there's a group of Watchers who leave Stan Lee hanging up there on space. So
as he's telling stories.
Yeah.
Poor Stan Lee. Yeah. That was, there were a lot of little credits, in there. I'd forgotten about that too.
There were so many of them. Mm-hmm. The only one I remembered, and the reason why I remembered it, is because everyone's mentioning, because Adam Warlock is going to be in this volume 3, is people.
I don't remember any of it.
I just, you know, because it's the gold people, I remember that part, but I remember there was some hint of them saying Adam and everyone freaking out,
mm-hmm,
that Adam Warlock was finally going to be in the Guardians. So
I think Frank was probably, yeah, the one freaking out when we first saw it, because he's like, oh my god, Adam Warlock. We're like, whoa.
Yeah, Adam Warlock is a big character in the comics. Yeah, I think he plays a big role in, yeah, Infinity War, or in the Infinity Saga, or something, whatever it's called in the comics. He plays a big role in that, where, mm-hmm, obviously that didn't happen in the MCU.
Right.
But we should have Frank with us next week to talk about that. So that'll be exciting to see, to get his reaction to Adam Warlock making his way to the MCU.
Yeah. And one last thing, not so much a mid-credit or end credit, but quick cameo. Howard the Duck makes a return in this movie, on the planet where Yondu meets up with Sylvester Stallone's character. And I'm like, God, Howard the Duck. Still can't believe it's a Marvel character.
So does Cosmo the Space Dog. Oh, in a picture only.
In a picture only. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, Cosmo's fine. Dog. Dogs always win. Howard the Duck, not so much.
Yeah, they're really trying to like rub it in our face that Howard the Duck is a Marvel property, because it's like,
it's terrible. It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great. So
it's not. It's just,
it's not. It's not nearly as good as Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay, Brady, let's do final thoughts on the movie, and let's do Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 expectations.
Okay, so in order. Volume 2 final thoughts. You know, I will agree with you, Justin, once again. This movie on the rewatch was not as bad as I remember it to be. For me, ultimately, what really dissatisfies me is the pacing of the movie, making it feel much longer than what it actually is. I just don't think the story really holds up in the end. Action scenes are great. The CGI, I think, for the most part, is great. Special effects, all that jazz. But overall, it's still not one of my favorites. It's never going to be. Just based on the amount of time that I checked my phone while watching this movie and just hoping we were getting to the end. Yeah, it's just not going to be one of my favorites. Sorry, y'all.
Yeah, and then for me, it definitely, you know, it definitely was better than I remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little long, but I think, yeah, the characters are all well served. So,
and I think
I enjoyed the rewatch.
I think Yesenia would agree too. She says she loves the development of characters, but not as fun as the first one.
Yeah. That's a perfect summary.
That is a really great summary, yeah, putting it together. Expectations.
Volume 3. What are you thinking?
Expectations for Volume 3. Listen, I am of the mindset of no longer going into any movie, MCU or otherwise, with any expectations, because I'm just setting myself up for disappointment. I don't want to do that, because in the end, I'm going to come out really pissed off. I can't believe I spent money on this and what have you. So no, I have no expectations whatsoever. I am guessing for sure that one or more characters are not going to survive.
Yep.
And that's pretty much all I can say when it comes to expectations. There's going to be characters that won't survive. Who? Can't say for sure, but it's going to be a thing. Yesenia's over here crying already, yeah. It seems. She says she's going to be a mess. Poor thing.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very emotional. I think that there are certain characters that, like Drax, I'm pretty sure we can say 99% chance he's done.
He's done. He's made it publicly known.
Dave Bautista's done. Yeah. I don't think, the thing is, it's a different Gamora, but I know Zoe Saldana doesn't want to do Gamora anymore, doesn't want to play the character, or would like to move away from that.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to see her. I mean, obviously, with James Gunn leaving and going to DC, like, I think that, you know, I don't think all the characters are going to die. Like, I feel like Groot will survive. I think Rocket will. I know they're trying to, like, tell us in the, you know, obviously, you know,
the trailer makes you believe otherwise.
Rocket is maybe the main character of the third movie, but I think he's going to survive. Star-Lord, I think Star-Lord survives ultimately. I think we'll see Chris Pratt again in the future, like in a like cameo kind of role. Not
Nebula?
I think Nebula is going to survive. Yeah, I do.
Okay. All right.
But
does Cosmo survive? That's the one I'm concerned
Cosmo
about.
Cosmo has to, because it's a dog. The dog can't die. No.
You kill a dog, everyone goes John Wick. Yeah, everyone's going to go John Wick on this.
Right. Disney's not going to kill a dog, you know? They've done it. They've had to do it before with Old Yeller. They learned their lesson with Old
Yeller. Listen, why must you be bringing up painful memories? My goodness.
Old Yeller is not a part of the MCU, though. So don't worry about that.
Disney property. Angel says no crying face emoji. Yes, I know. It's going to be difficult for many. Me, couldn't care less. Yesenia says we have holiday specials. They need to survive.
The holiday special is great.
The holiday special was amazing. Oh my God. That's my top one by far. 45 minutes, got to the point. Kevin Bacon. Yep. Great music as well. I can't remember the band. I know they're from North Texas because you always know who they are.
Yeah.
Their sound was so good. That song was so good. I loved it. Angel wants to know, why are we comparing Rocket to a dog? Because he doesn't like being called a raccoon, a rat, vermin. Mantis called him a puppy and he didn't correct her on that either. So we're just going to kind of roll with it. I don't know.
Yeah. And then finally, let's do box office predictions. What do you think? Marvel hasn't had a $1 billion movie since No Way Home. Or I'm sorry, since No Way Home. I'm trying to, the home movies get confusing with Spider-Man. But yeah, so No Way Home was the last movie that made $1 billion, right? And it's a co-production between Sony and Marvel, so I guess it's not even technically a full Marvel movie. Last year at this time, around the same date, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness came out and almost made $1 billion. It made $930 million.
Yeah.
Do you think that Guardians 3, the final Guardians movie, will top $1 billion, given that the first one made 750 or so, this one made 860? What do you think about Guardians 3?
I personally could go either way. I say it could top $1 billion solely because it's the final in their trilogy, right? I think a lot of people, it's beyond me, really like the Guardians. They like Chris Pratt. They like all, you know, everything. They like the story. Cool. Good for you. I am very happy for you that this movie is coming out. I think just because of the popularity it's gained over the years, that's why it could gain $1 billion. On the flip side, I say it will not gain $1 billion just because a lot of people feel with this phase and this new saga that we're in with the MCU, a lot of people feel that Marvel's losing its steam, right? They're running out of gas. Yeah. They don't feel that the stories are fleshed out. The movies don't look as good as they once did. A lot of people are just very critical about phase 5 at this point, you know, especially with Ant-Man kicking it off. And a lot of people just weren't really thrilled with that movie.
Right.
Honestly, it's a toss up. What are your thoughts?
So we just had a movie cross $1 billion. Super Mario Brothers just crossed $1 billion this past week. And there haven't been, I mean, the movies, they're not making, I mean, obviously Avatar 2 made $2 billion or whatever. It's, you know, Avatar is just the greatest thing ever, apparently. I guess we're just going to miss out forever because everyone loves Avatar but us. But I do feel It's hard to predict a billion, but I'm going to say this does reach a billion. I think this movie is going to be hailed as like, oh, Marvel's back, because I think James Gunn is really good at what he does. And I think the fact that it's his final movie with Marvel for at least for 10 years or whatever,
mm-hmm.
unless they do like a DC Marvel crossover, which could happen at some point. Maybe. But I think that this movie will be compelling. I think that people will like it. I think the key to Marvel movies making over a billion is getting the hardcore fans to see it more than once, because
yeah,
you look at Marvel movies, they kill the first weekend. I mean, Ant-Man had huge opening weekend,
mm-hmm.
but no one went to see it the second weekend. And I mean, yeah. I was one of those people. I didn't hate the movie. I thought it was okay. I liked it fine.
Yeah, I liked it fine.
But the key is to get the repeat viewing, and then obviously to get the general audience to interested in it. I think this movie has a chance. I think it will get a billion. I think it'll just get right at that mark. I mean, I think it'll make more than the previous one, which made 860. So I think it's going to get to a billion. Yeah.
Well, and this is a slightly biased opinion, but when you have the likes of Arnold Schwarzenegger in your corner, you know, Schwarzenegger being Chris Pratt's father-in-law, and he said he liked the movie, he was proud of Chris, I think people are just interested based on what, you know, Terminator had to say. Maybe. So maybe. Let's check it in with our live chat. So Yesenia does not think it'll hit a billion. She does think Flash is cut it at the pass.
Well, so Yesenia, like, I don't know if you've been watching lately, but I am like, the Flash is the movie I can't wait to see. Like, it comes out June 16th. I don't think it will. Like, anyway, it comes out June 16th. So there's enough runway for Guardians to make a billion or make a ton of money before the Flash starts. And I think the Flash will be better than Guardians 3.
Oh yeah. Yeah, probably.
I think it will make a billion, but
I'm not a DC fan, but I will agree to that.
Yeah. I think Guardians has enough time to get it done before the Flash hits theaters. So we'll see. I don't think, the thing is, Guardians will definitely make more opening weekend than the Flash will, because the Flash,
you know,
the Flash will have a big opening for DC, but because DC has disappointed and like been underwhelming for a long time.
Yeah.
I think the Flash is going to be a word of mouth movie, much like last year, how Top Gun Maverick just kept on playing and picking up steam. This movie has kind of the same thing with the return of Michael Keaton, you know, 1989's Batman. Like, that's going to get a lot of people back in the theater who, you know, who couldn't care less about the DCEU or the future DCU, don't know any of the other characters from the other movies. The fact that Michael Keaton's back in the suit, he's got a new Batwing, the classic Batmobile's back. Like, that's just awesome. And then, you know, there's another Batman in the movie. Ben Affleck's Batman's in the movie. There's a couple of Flash characters in the movie. Like, I think it's going to be awesome. But back to Guardians, I think Guardians will be, I think it'll be such a strong movie that the word of mouth and fans like us, we're going to go see it more than once. And that'll get it to a billion.
Moving on to Angel's comment. I wonder if it's just a threading story throughout. Like Thanos, the battle was the consistent story through each, but I don't know if that exists for this next iteration. I get it. And Angel, I know you're new to our channel, and we do very much appreciate you being here and sharing your thoughts with us. It's been great to hear, you know, your take on things. Justin and I are of the belief that with this phase, this is a rebuilding phase. Obviously, we lost a lot of great characters at the end of Endgame. Tony Stark, Captain America, Black Widow, But, you know, we lost a lot of great, you know, well-known characters, right? This is definitely a rebuilding phase. We also tend to advocate that Marvel is not losing steam. What they've had to do is shift, obviously, because with the Disney Plus platform, they've had to create shows, you know, to support that catalog, things of that nature. So, you know, shifting from solely making movies to making movies and shows, you know, that takes a lot. That takes a lot of, you know, production before, during, after. And so I definitely feel you have to lay down the foundations, of course, of these characters in order to build that story. I think Kang is a really great adversary. It's a separate subject to talk about what's going on with the actor who's playing Kang, things of that nature. And that maybe we'll do a separate pod talking about that one day, Justin. If y'all
if
are
they replace him or whatever, yeah, I think
that maybe, yeah. But I think definitely you have to lay down that foundation and get people to care about these characters and see how all of it's going to play into the ultimate boss, you know, the boss fight with Kang. So Justin, you want to add on that?
Yeah, I'll just say that I don't think this movie is going to have anything to do with the multiverse saga. Outside of the fact that, you know, we have a different Gamora from what happened in Endgame, right? This is James Gunn finishing his story with these characters. And I don't think there's going to be anything that's like going to point to the future. And unless it's like, hey, Adam Warlock is cool and we're probably going to see him again. Or, you know, I don't know. I don't think we're going to have a lot of Easter eggy kind of stuff to the future. I think. I mean, they will have a post credit, and maybe the post credit is just like one of those things, like one of the old school post credits where it has nothing to do with the movie. And it's just like a post credit for Captain America 4 or something. You know what I mean? Like they did that in the past, like Phase 2 and 3, that happened a lot where you'd have, you know, a movie and then the post credit scene would be nothing to do with the movie. Just this completely different.
Well, like Avengers, you know, when you see Cap, you know, boxing and then Nick Fury comes and talks to him, that led into
Avenger. You know what I'm saying? Like there's examples of that. Like the twins, that one from
Oh yeah, that was cool.
Like they weren't in that. What movie was that? Was that Winter Soldier? I don't remember.
They made their appearance in Age of Ultron.
Right.
But, their actual appearance, but I think the tease was at the end of Winter Soldier.
I think it was Winter Soldier. Yeah. So
they all start blending in together.
We might get a post credit like that that points to the multiverse, but the movie itself is going to be the finale of the Guardians of the Galaxy story and James Gunn's story with these characters. And
I agree.
I think that's going to appeal to people. I think that's what people are saying they want, right? They want just these great stories that aren't necessarily connecting to stuff and aren't commercials for other stuff. So this is it. This is going to be your shot because the Marvels, which comes out in November, it's the next MCU movie after Volume 3, it obviously will have things that point to the multiverse saga, to the next Avengers movie and all that stuff.
Yes.
But no, this is a finale for these characters, I would think, by and large.
For sure. Yep. Absolutely. So definitely like to hear everyone's thoughts. Once again, those in the live chat, those who watch our replay, leave us comments down below what your thoughts are on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Are you going to go see Volume 3? Comes out this Friday, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. Ah, yeah, yeah. Sorry. had to do it. We're definitely
going.
I mean, kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's fine. Yeah, it's good.
Being Hispanic. Shut up.
It was good.
but we're going to go see it for sure. We are definitely going to bring you our true reactions and review of Volume 3. Come next Wednesday. Is that correct, Justin? We're talking the 10th.
Right.
May the 10th. The day after your birthday. Yep. So we do invite everyone to join us for our review of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. That's coming at you here on YouTube. I'm tired.
Yeah.
YouTube live stream at 5:30 p.m. Central Time. We invite you once again to join us. Tell us your thoughts. It's also Mexican Mother's Day, as Yesenia is pointing out. It is Mexican Mother's Day. So
heard of that.
What? You've known me for how many years and you don't know about Mexican Mother's Day? Shame on you. Shame.
This is literally the first I've ever heard of this.
Wow.
It's also on May 10th.
It's always on May 10th. It doesn't matter what day it falls on. It's not like how Mother's Day here in the States. It's second Sunday.
Sometimes it's on my birthday. Sometimes it's like this year, what is it? The 17th?
The
7th.
No, I don't know. Something. But anyway, yeah, it's always May 10th for Mexican Mother's Day. So the more you know.
Ding, May 14th ding. Is Mother's Day.
Right, oh, okay. Gotcha.
Okay. Cool. Okay.
So yeah, join us. My point, join us next Wednesday, May 10th at 5:30 p.m. Central Time for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 review.
Yeah. And also you can follow us on social media, Brittany, right?
Absolutely. We do encourage everyone to, once again, subscribe to our YouTube channel here. Don't forget to hit that like button and hit that notification bell. That way you will know the next time we're going live, the next time we upload a video, most likely going live. But you can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The handle is at Watchers Basement. We appreciate those who have followed us already. We are also on the road to now, what do you think, Justin? 275 subscribers here on YouTube. We're at 260.
Let's go for 300.
Going for 300.
I like the round numbers. Yeah, the big round numbers.
I do like the round numbers. Yeah, that'd be great. So we are on the road to 300 subscribers, y'all. So be sure to hit that subscribe button here on YouTube. And if you want us to review something that you like, TV shows, movies, whatever the case may be, you can hit us up on any one of those social media platforms, but use hashtag WatchersBasement. It helps grow our audience. It helps us find you and what you want us to review. But if you're not into video podcasts, we got you covered, because we are available with audio podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Be sure to follow us there on all those platforms and give us a 5-star rating.
Thank you, Brittany. Appreciate it. So for Brittany, this is Justin saying thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Have a good night. Bye-bye.